Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Let me take this extra mic off. I've never done that before. That's what's called, Joy Taylor, our tease mic.
Well, you know what? We're back from holiday. We're just trying to get back in the mode.
Just trying to figure out how to do this radio TV simulcast thing. Hope you had a great weekend. Boy, it was steamy in Los Angeles this weekend.
Yeah.
It's hot. Did you stay in town?
I did not. I was in Kansas City with Earl.
Oh, you're kidding.
Where it was also very steamy. It was hot.
You've been on your tour this summer, the world's hottest places.
I think it's over now. I think we're in town for a little while.
All right, great. All right, it's good to have you on a Tuesday. I hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. I've always felt that the Zeke, the Jerry battle here is it's a PR game. And Jerry's very good at the PR game. He's not the best owner in terms of Super Bowls and wins. He's very good in brand building and getting his message out. And I've always felt that he took it personally when Zeke didn't show up to practice camp and was in Cabo. The optics were bad. I think Jerry was ticked off. Jerry went to the well for this guy, went after Roger Goodell for this guy, and you pay him off by going to Cabo and bailing on camp. So Jerry has made a point of coming over and over and over and sending messages. He sent another one yesterday. So he signed an offensive lineman whose contract wasn't up to a new deal. The message is, Zeke, we got money here, but it's shrinking. And offensive line. And then he signed Jalen Smith 10 days ago. Money early, by the way. Both contracts did not have to be signed. Both contracts did not have to be extended. And Jerry's like, shrinking, shrinking, shrinking. It's getting tiny. It's getting tiny. Now, Shannon Sharp this morning on Undisputed, it looks like Zeke, seeing all these new deals, is at least making a move to this country.
I received some information that Zeke and his team are on their way back to Dallas. Now, I don't know if they've already landed, but I was told they're heading back. I believe this is an effort of good faith. So, Jerry, you said this is a marathon. Let's not kill this deal 100 miles from the finish line, Skip, basically what I'm saying. And I believe Zeke wants to show Jerry, I'm back.
Now, Jerry has now signed two contracts, extensions he did not have to sign. And both contracts are for players who have sort of over-delivered. Jalen Smith got hurt, came back Pro Bowler. And Collins, the offensive lineman, he got involved in a real ugly situation in college. He dropped out of the draft. Cowboys rolled the dice on him, and he is over-delivered for them. So Jerry, again, is signing guys who over-delivered the contracts early. He does not have to. The messaging to Zeke is, and Jerry was live on Dallas radio this morning. Once again, he goes back to his new favorite phrase.
There's no question the pie is getting smaller. To the extent that we look at how much we're allocating to each and every player, each and every position, it creates boundaries that you can go in other positions, and it should do that. That's called planning, and that's what we're doing. And so I can't give you a straight answer there other than this takes a nice chunk out of the pie.
Jerry, I'm surprised he hasn't talked about Boston cream pie, apple pie. He's talked about pies for the last month. The truth is that the Collins deal on the offensive line actually cleared up more space. It actually cleared up money for Dallas. But Jerry, it's not about actual details here. It's about a message. Be a good guy. I'll support you after your mistakes. I support players. Don't make me look bad. Don't go to Cabo. Don't try to win this. Jerry's got Zeke. Back in Dallas, the optics are good. It will get done. But Jerry's been very smart on this, is that when you have a star player and you're not paying him, the locker room can grumble. But Jerry has paid two guys early Why? Because he wants to keep the locker room solid for the season. Guys in the locker room are congratulating Jalen Smith, Lyle Collins. Way to go. So Jerry doesn't look stingy. Jerry's not anti-player. We take care of our people if our people take care of us. This is not just about Zeke. This is about Jerry sending a message to Cowboy players. Good dudes, show up to camp. I'll take care of you. By the way, memo to all you other running backs in this league. If Zeke's struggling getting paid, good luck. Because Melvin Gordon, Chargers are like, no thanks. Receivers getting paid, quarterbacks getting paid, D linemen getting paid, edge rushers getting paid, quarterbacks getting paid, running backs ain't getting paid. Memo to the rest of the running backs. You can fire your agent. The industry's changed. All right, let me shift to this. There was a big trade over the weekend. Jadeveon Clowney went to Seattle. And Houston is paying half his contract. And then Houston got a couple of, you know, so-so picks. Everybody's like, oh, Seattle stole it, dominated. And then they made another deal in Houston. They went and got Laremy Tunsil, a very good ascending talent left tackle, top 10 league, not top five yet, but he's getting there. And they gave up more picks, and everybody's like, oh, they lost that trade. Houston's lost. They don't know what they're doing. Crazy Houston. Timeout. You know what I find with fans and media? Fans in the media are obsessed with who won the trade. You know what Uncle Colin's obsessed with? Who wins the games? Houston today's a better football team. Houston's offensive line is the weakness, the albatross of the franchise. They just got an ascending top 10 left tackle. Not top five yet, but he's an ascending player with another decade to play to protect their asset. Seattle, by the way, also won the trade. Not because of draft picks. Because once they gave Frank Clark up to Kansas City, they need a pass rush. And they went and got a Pro Bowl pass rusher. Seattle today is better. Houston today is better. Draft picks. Pete Carroll's a great talent evaluator. He can't get first-round draft picks right. He's had five in Seattle. One has been good, Earl Thomas. A couple have been whiffs. By the way, the Miami Dolphins have 13 draft picks today. Would you rather have that or Philadelphia's roster? New England's traded three picks in the last week. Draft picks have never been more fluid in my life. The Seattle Seahawks had four draft picks. Then Russell Wilson pretty much demanded pay me. They did. And within 2 hours, Seattle had 11 draft picks. People are giving those things away. You're telling me about draft picks. Do you know the Super Bowl favorite? The New England Patriots. Joy, do you know the oldest team in the NFL this morning?
Yeah, it's the Patriots.
Yeah. And by the way, my second favorite team to win the Super Bowl is the Eagles. Do you know the second oldest team in the NFL this morning, Joy?
Is it the Philadelphia Eagles?
It is. You want 22-year-olds. I want to win today, and I want 28-year-olds. Draft picks have never moved more and more often in my life than now. A couple years ago, Cleveland had two first-round picks. They drafted Johnny Manziel, tire fire. Justin Gilbert, whiff, 0-2. Draft picks matter if you can land the right guy. And even in the first round, about 30% of the guys just can't play or don't play up to the level you think. The league now is compensatory picks, trade draft picks. You know, when you get a rookie quarterback on a contract like the Houston Texans have, Jared Goff Rams, or Deshaun Watson for the Texans, those windows are tight. And Houston's like, we're going for it. We got 2 years here, maybe one and a half with Deshaun Watson's contract. We are going for it. And ask yourself this morning, name another NFL team, because I don't think the Patriots can say this. Name another NFL team in their division that this morning can say we have the best quarterback in our division, Deshaun Watson. We have the best defensive lineman in our division, J.J. Watt. We have now the best left tackle in our division. Debatable, but one or two. Laremy Tunsil. And we have the best wide receiver, DeAndre Hopkins. So I got the best receiver, quarterback, left tackle, and defensive lineman in my division. I don't think the Patriots can say that. I don't think the Philadelphia Eagles can say that. I don't think the LA Rams can say that. I don't think the New Orleans Saints can say that. The windows are closing for Houston. They got a rookie contract on our quarterback. 2 years, they got to pay Deshaun Watson. So they're like, why get him hurt? Why waste time? Let's go for it. You can accumulate draft picks. God, New England gives them away. Got them back. Gives them away. Got them back. Seattle got seven virtually overnight after the Russell Wilson deal, forced them to get younger fast. So, you know, I just don't buy this. You know, Houston got buried on the trade. Philadelphia, New England, oldest team in the league. Those are your two old teams in the league. Look at who's winning the playoffs. It's the old teams. It's the Drew Brees. You know, Aaron Donald's not a kid. You know, Robert Woods. Go look at Andre Whitworth, Aaron Donald. Go look at the Rams. Goff's the kid. Not a lot of kids on the roster. It's a lot of guys. Aqib Talib. It's guys who have been around this league forever. That's who I'll take. So I thought Houston won the trade. I thought Seattle won the trade. People are obsessed by who won the trade. I'm obsessed by winning games. And Houston, to me, this morning is going to win their division. And I think win it going away. I really do. Like New England, Houston. I feel strongest about those teams winning their division and winning it with 2 to 3 games left minimum to go in the season.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Aaron Rodgers, a story out of the Milwaukee Journal. Good to have you back. Aaron won the Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers tug of war for audibles. Aaron Rodgers won. He'll get to call the audibles he wants. That's what Matt LaFleur, first-year head coach in the NFL who spent 1 year in Tennessee and doesn't have much of a resume. By the way, he left the Rams. Rams were fine without him. He went to Tennessee for a year. Their offense got worse. Now he's the coach of Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers won the audible battle, which I don't think was much of a battle. It just went public early, and Aaron was a little disgruntled about it when it came out. Here's the reality is, Matt LaFleur's resume, he's not going to beat Aaron Rodgers. But let me defend Aaron Rodgers on this. Okay, there's a lot of different varieties of quarterbacks. You have Aaron Rodgers and Big Ben are Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and they run around and ad-lib more than I like, but they do it. And then Drew Brees and Tom Brady don't run around at all, and they're going to be Hall of Fame quarterbacks too, and they pretty much stay within the play. And then Russell Wilson's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback, and he runs around a lot. And then Phillip Rivers could not outrun my chair, and he is going to get Hall of Fame votes. There's a lot of different ways to do this. And you're not going to convince a guy who's 35 years old, has a Super Bowl, and he's rich to make massive alterations. Here's a reality with men. I'll speak for men. I will not speak for anybody else. Once a guy is a professional athlete at 35, you can tweak things. He's not changing. He's rich. He's not changing. 35-year-old pro athlete is similar to a 55-year-old attorney, broadcaster, actor, musician, who's successful. Like, my style's my style. I'm not making big alterations. My style's my style. I'm 55. Aaron's 35. But in the average successful person's life, that's 55. Aaron's not changing anything. Now, you can tweak stuff, but when Brett Favre was in Green Bay, he's like, yeah, I'm not changing anything. Aaron's willing to make slight tweaks. But I'm not so sure if you look at Aaron Rodgers, again, Daniel Day-Lewis at this point, you can't go to Daniel Day-Lewis and go, okay, from now on, be funnier. Al Pacino, only comedies. These guys have a style. There's a lot of different styles for actors, musicians, quarterbacks. As long as you're successful, win games, and have a ring, you're not going to get Aaron to move much off what he likes to do. Andy Reid was on our show last week and said, when you get somebody that's really talented at quarterback, be careful about radical changes like Patrick Mahomes.
Don't mess him up, Colin. Let his personality show. You start messing with that part of his game, and you got a problem. And so I learned that with Brett and Donovan and Michael Vick. They all put their own stamp on it, and their own personality shows through the offense. And you go different places with the offense. One of the great things is you have flexibility within the offense to do different things. And, man, you play to their strength, and you cut them loose and let them go.
Yes, Aaron, to me, some of his leadership components I don't love. He ad-libs a little too much for me, as does Big Ben. You're not going to make a radical change to a 35-year-old pro athlete. That's like a 55-year-old successful attorney. You're not going to change him. You can tweak things, but he is what he is. Take his strengths. Those are the assets. Try to cover his weaknesses and liabilities. But people don't make successful people later in their careers. As the window closes, very rarely are going to make massive changes. Why would they? It's hard enough to be successful. But if you've been successful enough to get rich and win rings, you're not moving off that for a guy whose resume is like this thin and Aaron's is like that thick.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
All right, so I do this every Tuesday. You know, on Monday, I do Colin Right, Colin Wrong. And every Tuesday at this time, Monday Night Football's over, I say these are the 10 best teams in the league. And so we don't have any games yet. This is based off the draft, free agency, injuries, what I've seen in the preseason. Here we go. Our 10 through 1, a herd hierarchy.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams, according to Colin. Number 10.
Chicago Bears. I like their defensive personnel. I think there's limitations with Mitch Trubisky. Last five games, he had five touchdowns and five interceptions. The good news for the Bears is, I think for the first time in 20 years, I simultaneously like their coach, Matt Nagy, and their general manager, Ryan Pace. Offensive line, we'll see. Quarterback, low ceiling. They lost defensive coordinator Vic Fangio. Their schedule now is a first-place schedule. Listen, we know defensively their front seven's going to be a handful, but I think there's a lot of good front sevens in the NFL, and they have better quarterbacks. So I put the Bears at 10.
Number 9.
The Chargers. Now, last year I had them near the top, but Derwin James, their best athlete, is out until probably Thanksgiving. Melvin Gordon, I wouldn't want to pay him more than $9, $10 million a year, but he matters, and he's out. They've also had Terrell Williams, a wide receiver, their third receiver, is now in Oakland. Jason Verrett, a good corner, left. And, you know, I just think they've lost their best athlete on defense. Their best running back on offense. And Russell Okun, they've had health issues with him on the offensive line. So I don't think it's going to be a great September for the Chargers. I think it's going to be a little bumpy. I've got them at 9.
Number 8.
Dallas Cowboys. Again, they've got new coordinators. I expect them to be battling for a playoff spot by the end of the year. But it's very possible with new coordinators, the Zeke situation, they're not as dialed in as you'd want them to be. Here's what I like about Dallas. They were 7-2 with the Amari Cooper trade. Jason Witten's come in, the healthy offensive line. For the first time, it feels like in like a 15, 18 months, their offensive line is healthy. So it's a very good football team. They also ended, I haven't heard much about Randall Cobb, but they also threw him into the bunch at wide receiver. So I think this is a very good Dallas Cowboy team that's got a remarkable number of great players under 25. Now, I'd rather you be older once the playoffs start, but I think that serves them well in the regular season.
Number 7.
Green Bay. Again, they could be much higher than this. I have them winning their division. I think they've made a real commitment to defense in the last couple of years. I thought they had a very, very good draft defensively. And I thought they had a very good free agent. They picked up mid-level free agents like Preston Smith, a linebacker from Washington. Didn't cost them a fortune. They got Billy Turner on the offensive line. Aaron Rodgers had a down year, but it was 25 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. I think their schedule is very workable. In fact, I think they win their opener at Chicago on Thursday. I think it's a very interesting team that will likely be better as the season goes on. They are young in spots, but they've always developed a very good offensive line. Devontae Adams is a ascending star at wide receiver. Aaron Jones is one of the more underrated running backs in the league. And Aaron Rodgers is healthy, so I have Green Bay at 7.
Number 6.
Houston Texans. I think they have the best quarterback, wide receiver, defensive lineman, and arguably left tackle in their division. I don't care about the draft picks. Don't forget this. The Houston Texans are interesting. Like, when I say Houston Texans, you're like, they're okay. They've won their division 3 of the last 4 years. That's pretty good. And I think they're very good at the positions that matter. Again, Bill O'Brien keeps winning his division, and because they don't pay it off in the postseason, we kind of forget about him. Well, it's not like Andrew Luck had a ton of, you know, we all love Indianapolis's rise, and then they weren't winning a ton of playoff games either. So I think the Texans are a real team. I think they have absolutely elevated the most important spot on the offensive line, and I'll put them at number 6.
Number 5.
New England Patriots. I think by the end of the year, they could be the best team. I don't think they'll be the best team early. They lost to David Andrews, the center. I'm sorry, that's a big deal for New England. He calls the audibles. I think their wide receiver group could be good, but it's really choppy. Josh Gordon just arrived. Edelman was out for most of camp. Demaryius Thomas was out, then cut. He's back. N'Keal Harry, who I think could be a really good wide receiver, he's on the IR. Gronk retired. Chris Hogan's gone. They're a running power team now more than I ever remember, but I don't think their O-line and their receiving group will be settled. They open with Pittsburgh. That's no day at the beach, so if they have a choppy September, don't be shocked.
Number four.
Slightly ahead of them, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They got rid of some noise. They're very focused. I think they did a really job to quietly upgrade their defense. They went and got Steve Nelson, a corner from Kansas City. I think it's maybe the best secondary potentially they've had in a while. They went and got Mark Barron, who can play linebacker. They went and drafted Devin Bush, who has been very, very good, it looks like, so far in the preseason. I think their defense is going to be better. They led the NFL in sacks anyway. I get the noise of Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. Those stories are now all gone. Big Ben, by the way, led the NFL in passing yards last year, so his precision is not as good as I'd like, but he continues to be an elite, you know, top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And also added Dante Moncrief. James Washington looks good at wide receiver in year two from Oklahoma State. I got him at four.
Number three.
L.A. Rams. You know, I know because I'm in L.A., Colin, Rams, Todd Gurley's back and healthy. Cooper Kupp, who's actually the guy they target more than any other receiver when he's healthy, is back. They've added, like, smart guys like Eric Weddle. Their offensive line, they've drafted it well. And, you know, they ranked in top five last year in rushing, in passing, yards per game. Only team in the NFL top five in both. I think they're a very balanced offense. In their division, they've got rebuilding Arizona and kind of not sure what to make of them, Seattle. And a San Francisco team that's talented, but they're rebuilding. I think it's very possible they go 5-1 in their division. I have Rams at three.
Number two.
Philadelphia Eagles, I think, will end up in the Super Bowl. The best combination of offensive and defensive line talent in the NFL. Carson Wentz got hurt last year, but even last year with Carson Wentz, he had a career high in completion percentage, passing touchdowns, passing yards a game. They've added DeSean Jackson, a very nice deep threat, though at the end of his career, he can still make plays. Andre Dillard, attack. Maybe the sleeper in the draft, if a first-round guy can be a sleeper. I think this is just organizationally a very strong outfit. GM Howie Roseman, the owner, the coach, and the quarterback. I like the Eagles a lot.
Number one.
Kansas City Chiefs. I think Andy Reid's teams start really hot. He's a great play designer in the offseason. They'll unveil some new tricks. I do not buy for a second that Patrick Mahomes is going to, like, he peaked last year. Well, if that's the peak, and he comes down 5%, I'm okay with that. The thing I like about him, they added Shady McCoy this week to give them a little running back depth. They made a huge acquisition this offseason in Frank Clark, Seattle's best defensive lineman. I think between Chris Jones and Frank Clark, they are going to be a complete handful up front. They've won at least 10 games in four straight seasons, but like the Houston Texans, because they don't pay off with a lot of playoff wins, you think of the Texans and you think of Kansas City. It was a double-digit win team. This is what they do. They win 10 games. Andy Reid's one of the best coaches. They led the NFL last year, averaging almost 430 yards a game. I do not see it going down. By the way, they drafted a wide receiver, second round, Mecole Hardman. Watch him. He had a good preseason. Keep your eye on him. So I have Kansas City number one.
There you Colin, go. No Saints?
No.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
No, that's not what I was thinking. And well, I think they're maybe 11. I got them. I have them. I think they'll be fine, but I think Atlanta this year is better. I think Atlanta, I'd put 11. And, you know, that's a funny thing because I was talking to you guys this morning in the meeting. It's like, I feel great about all my predictions except the NFC South. I never know what to make of it. If you told me Carolina wins 11-5, remember we did that last week, and I'm like, yeah, I can see them going 11-5. Atlanta last year I had in the Super Bowl, and then their secondary, they had these like season-ending injuries. I think it was Deion Jones, a linebacker, got hurt. So they were just a mess. They've upgraded, they believe, coordinators. Matt Ryan, by the way, last year, again, there's so many young, exciting quarterbacks, the Baker Mayfields, that we didn't talk about Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan had a monster year last year. They have clearly upgraded their offensive line in the draft, so Atlanta... and Matt's a guy that needs a good front, like Phillip Rivers. He's not going to run around a lot. So I think Atlanta solved their big problem, O-line, and I think they're not going to be as unlucky with injuries. So I picked Atlanta to win the division, so I'd probably have them 11. I think although I could argue Atlanta's 11, New Orleans 12, Carolina 13. I just don't. They're all just right there, depending on who's healthy.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
There's a reason the Patriots don't draft a lot of receivers. Because of Tom Brady, it's very hard to make an impact. Running backs go from college to the Patriots, all hit. Receivers, it's hard. If Tom doesn't trust you, if you miss practices, you miss routes. Prime example, N'Keal Harry's on the IR. He's not going to start the season. We're not going to see him until Thanksgiving. He got banged up, ankle issues. And I've said this about New England. I think N'Keal Harry's a good player. It is hard as a wide receiver to go to New England with Tom Brady. There are quarterbacks in this league that a young receiver, Aaron Rodgers, Big Ben can go to. They ablib a little bit more. Tom is now so precise. He doesn't want to get hit. He's not doing seven-step drops. If you don't learn the offense, if you miss practice time, I'm not throwing it to you. And N'Keal Harry, according to reports, had one or two nice days of practice, got a banged-up ankle, missed practice, and you're not going to get the ball thrown to you. This shows you why New England loves to draft running backs. They all work, and they don't like drafting wide receivers. This is why they go get a Wes Walker. They get a Chris Hogan. They get a Demaryius Thomas. They get a Randy Moss. They go out and get people already in the league that can come in, know the pro game, and Tom is incredibly demanding on wide receivers. So here's N'Keal Harry. They go back and say, okay, we don't draft receivers well. Let's go try to get another one. And he's not going to play. So, and he had missed practices. And once you miss practices with Tom, you know, you're out of the order. Here, I'm for our TV audience, I'm not going to read all the names. We're putting up their high round draft picks at wide receiver. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work with New England. So I hope the kid works. He's a hard worker, but it shows you, you know, Tom is running a precise offense and it's up to you to fit into it. He's not fitting into your college style. You got to fit into him. You get hurt in camp, you're done.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hugh Jackson stopped by. Great to see him. You know, it's amazing. You get some time off away from the game, the goatee. You look like $1 million. Look at you.
Thank you.
Healthy and happy.
Thank you. In a good place and excited to be here, though.
It's great. So, Hugh, I want to ask you, so Seattle goes and gets, they lost Frank Clark, who's a real player. So they got to get a pass rush. So they bring in Jadeveon Clowney. It's late. Houston, offensive line issues. Bill O'Brien's an offensive guy. I got Deshaun Watson. He's had two surgeries. I got to get a left tackle. How problematic is it? Those are important positions, but how tough is it to take a Clowney or Laremy Tunsil? Now I got 7 days to get ready. Is it tough?
It's tough, you know, but those are positions that you have to have that talent at. You're talking about a guy that's going to protect the quarterback in Tunsil, and you're talking about a guy that's going to rush the quarterback in Clowney. I mean, they're two of the better players in the National Football League at their positions, and if you have a chance to secure their services, you need to.
Average game in this league is 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, in your Cleveland years, you had higher hopes, but you're also a realist. You know where you struggle. You know where your personnel's good. So, your former team, Cleveland. I look at Cleveland, and I think on the perimeter, corner receiver, I really like him. I think their defensive front, they spent money. There's some players. But there's a lot of new faces, Hugh, Olivier Vernon, Sheldon Richardson, Odell Beckham's missed 16 of his last 32. Would you worry about a lot of new faces, some big personalities, and a new head coach? Is it too much?
It could be. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of balancing that you have to do in that situation, when you bring in that many new players who are as talented as those players are. I mean, a lot of those guys are alpha personalities.
Sure.
So you have to be ready to balance those particular personalities along with creating the environment for those guys to mesh together and become a really good football team.
Jarvis Landry's one of the most underrated receivers in the league. He's not flashy, but he gives you 90 catches. You know, I know you liked it when he came over from Miami. You got Odell, David Njoku, Nick Chubb. Listen, let's be honest about this. These are alpha males. These are millionaires, and they're young men. That's a lot of mouths to feed. How would you, as a coach, with all those talented players, Is a lot of it just psychology to make sure they're because there are going to be games.
Oh,
Odell's going to be doubled, Hugh. He's going to get four targets.
Right. No, you have to wear that hat. You just said it. I mean, those guys' value is tied to what they do in games, you know, and how well they play and what they're seen as. So as a coach, you have to put those guys in position to have touches for so many different reasons. One, for personal reasons, but the other reason is because they can affect the game and win the game for you. So the strategy of how to do that is going to be so important, you know, for their offensive staff and the head coach.
Freddie Kitchens was on your staff. You like him. I don't know much about him. He was a running back coach, a tight end coach. What do we know?
Well, I think you just said it. I mean, he's been a lifelong assistant coach. And again, head coaches come in all different shapes and sizes. I get it, especially now in today's National Football
right.
League. They're coming from all over the place. So we'll know more about what Freddie is once the season progresses. But obviously, you know, he's a talented person. He coached the running backs when I was there. He'd been at the Cardinals and was a quarterback coach. So he's been around offensive football, been around some good coaches. But we'll start to know exactly who he is as his season starts to go.
We've got some college guys coming into the NFL and certainly college schematics. But it's still overwhelmingly, Lamar Jackson won his division. Russell Wilson moves around, but mm-hmm. has developed into a great pocket passer. Is there within the league a little pushback on college stuff, pro stuff? Because I'm seeing some concepts, but if Cliff Kingsbury goes 2-14, owners look around the league and go, give me my NFL guys. Do you think we'll just keep seeing college stuff into the NFL?
I think there's a book that says Who Moved My Cheese? And I think things are changing somewhat. You know, when you look across the National Football League, there's more of these young players that are coming in and they're producing and they're having success. So I think, you know, there will be a time where, you know, we'll start to slow down and the old NFL way will catch up. You know, everything kind of goes in cycles.
It does.
But I really, truly believe that, you know, those players, those quarterbacks, especially when you look at the two young men that have just come out of Oklahoma. You know, they've done a tremendous job.
Yeah,
you
Baker
know,
and Kyler.
Absolutely. These guys are going to be two of the better quarterbacks in the league. That's what we're hoping, you know. So when you look at it, I think things are changing somewhat, but you also still have to have some of that old tried and true National Football League flavor in it, too.
I picked the Steelers to win the AFC North over Cleveland, and the primary reason was I think Pittsburgh's defensive front will give Cleveland's offensive line, in my opinion, their weakness, the tackle positions in their O-line. I think Pittsburgh, I don't like the matchup for Cleveland in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like the Steelers O-line, and I do love the Browns D-line.
Mm-hmm.
But this league is not a perimeter league. It's one on the interior. Let's talk about Pittsburgh. Very noisy last year.
Mm-hmm.
Got away from it. They went and got a corner, Steve Nelson from Kansas City. Devin Bush looks to be very good.
Right.
Mark Barron, they move it. You know, he'll be in the box. He's mm-hmm. a big hitter. TJ Watt can really play. Talk about the Steelers personnel. They didn't win the division last year. I could still make an argument it's as good as most personnel in the league.
No, it is. I mean, there's no question. And they're very strategic in the players that they put on their team. You know, when you think of the young player they drafted, linebacker out of Michigan.
Devin Bush.
I mean, he's going to be phenomenal for them. He's going to give them that dimension that they were missing, you know, when they lost.
The rangy linebacker.
Absolutely. Who can go cover any, you know, tight ends and running backs at any time, you know, so, and he can run and hit. So Pittsburgh, when you think about them, they are still built the way they are. They're going to be a very good defensive football team. Very, very talented. Obviously, Mike Tomlin has done a great job. You don't stay there as long as he has and not be very good at what you do. So I still think they're the class of the AFC North, and I think they'll show that.
Yeah, it's, you know, we don't talk about offensive lines, but I tell all these Brown fans, that Pittsburgh O-line is about as good as the mm-hmm. AFC has.
Mm-hmm.
You faced it.
There's no doubt. They're good. And I mean, obviously, you don't have the production that they've had with the Bs, you know, before without that offensive line. I mean, they're good.
I want to talk about the running back position. Hugh Jackson joining us. Analytics are changing sports.
Mm-hmm.
I say I like manalytics. I like a little analytics, but I don't want to reduce athletes to numbers.
Absolutely.
Because I think it puts your coaches in very difficult spots. You know, when you look at running backs, I'm Jason Garrett. I'm fighting for Zeke.
Absolutely.
I am fighting. If I'm Anthony Lynn, I'm fighting for Melvin Gordon.
Absolutely.
Do you worry about analytics in football moving away from the running game and that some of those numbers and data as a coach, you just need stars. You need players.
Absolutely.
Like if you're in Dallas, how do you reconcile the numbers say pay Zeke this and take me there?
Well, I think you said it. I think the numbers are saying one thing, but the algorithm of a coach is saying a whole different thing because we know. We know what it's going to take week in and week out to produce a winner on offense and on defense, and we know what those players look like and what they play like. Numbers are just numbers, and it's who's putting in those numbers and what kind of numbers are you putting in to get this information? Because at the end of the day, this is still about winning and losing. It's not about anything else, you know. So if it's about winning and losing, I'm going to trust my coaches first and foremost.
Okay.
The numbers might help inform me of certain things that we can do better. But at the end of the day, I have to trust what the coaches know and what they see.
You know, I've been critical of Baker Mayfield. I think he's a talented kid. I'm not into noisy quarterbacks. It's just my personal taste. My dad was kind of a conservative business guy, right? So that's the environment I was in. Mm-hmm. Emotional discipline, you know, put your money away. I tend to like the Russell Wilson, the Goff. I mean, Goff's in L.A. I've never seen him.
Right.
Brady, Breeze, Andrew Luck. I think Mahomes has a lot of that. He's fun, but he's all football. Baker, and you've had your run in there. Baker's a lot of noise and a lot of stuff. I think I'm being very realistic saying I just wonder how it plays for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's what is that a legitimate concern?
I think it is. You know, obviously he's a good football player.
Yeah.
I think we all agree with that. You know, and everybody handles things and do things differently. You know, and he's going to have to figure out what's going to be the best way for him moving forward to be what I truly believe he wants to be, which is one of the better players in the league. I think you said it. You haven't seen a lot of players probably handle things the way he has.
And become that.
Absolutely. And I think he'll learn as he goes. You know, I think he'll be willing to learn because this league will humble you. You know, it just will. It's what it does. You know, I always say quarterbacks truly should start on their knees because this league will bring you to your knees. So you'll learn very quickly, and he will, just as anybody who are like that, that there's certain things that happen in this league that you have to really adhere to. And I think Baker will figure that out.
You know, you didn't have a winning record in Cleveland, but you know, you also didn't have a ton of personnel. The quarterback situation was, you know, that's the league. Herm Edwards always says, mm-hmm. I'd be in the league if you gave me, you know, if you have the star quarterback.
Right.
He had Chad Pennington who got hurt, and there goes Herm becomes a broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into a season now, does a coach have a sense? Now, you obviously have to sell to the troops.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to win Sunday.
Absolutely.
But do you know as a coach, do you think there's 7-8 coaches in this league know that they're crossing their fingers here? Like they just know their personnel doesn't match up.
Absolutely. You know, because if you are an experienced coach who's coached in the league, you know what it takes to win and lose. But you can't stand in front of the troops and say, we don't have a chance. You have to go week in and week out and give them everything you have to give them the best opportunity to have success. And I think the players really appreciate that. There's veteran players that know, you know, truly, we might not have a chance here.
Right.
But their job, you know, your job when you sign up for it is to be the best you can be. And that's all you can do. But is there some coaches that I know that probably know that their teams are going to struggle? Absolutely.
Hugh, I've said there are NFL coaches that I believe could flourish at the college level. I've said this. Bill Parcells would not deal with boosters. I don't think he'd be a successful college coach. And then there are college guys, I think. Brian Kelly could probably go to the NFL and win some games. And I'll ask you this again. You're going to miss Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever coach on Saturdays?
Oh, absolutely. I would. I've had an opportunity to spend some time at the University of Maryland with Mike Locksley, who I think is a tremendous football coach. I think he's going to do a great job there. And I was really impressed, you know, just by the structure and what that looked like, because I've been out of it for so long.
Right.
So there was an itch a little bit.
Sure.
And it was fun to see, you know, and being able to compare it to the National Football
League. Well, Herm Edwards is your friend. I mean, I talked
Absolutely.
To Herm last week.
Yeah.
He's having a real good time.
Yes, they are. So, again, I mean, it's coaching, you know. So if an opportunity would present itself, there's no question I would definitely look at it.
Is there any high like Sunday in the NFL?
No. There's not. I mean, game day is unbelievable. You know, the smell of the grass, the fans being outside, all the pre-game parties that are going on, and watching the players walk into the locker room with a true belief that we're going to defend our turf today. There's just nothing like it.
Hey, it's great seeing you.
You too.